Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, my dear friends, fans, colleagues, no matter where you are and when you're listening, I welcome you back to Voices of the Sacred Feminine. And if for some reason you don't actually have a clock or a calendar, if you are listening live, then you can count on it being 11 a.m. Pacific on a Wednesday, because that's when the show airs live. But you can always catch the interviews later from the archives. In fact, there are 13 years of incredible archives from so many foremothers and wayshowers, women and men, and so many of those interviews are just as relevant today as the day we talked about them for the first time on the air. And, you know, we are on Spotify, Amazon, Google Podcasts, Apple, all the usual places you catch these podcasts. So you can find us almost anywhere, including going to my website, KarenTate.net, and click on the podcast button, and that will take you to some of the more recent podcasts, as well as some of the ones that we've highlighted, because they are from you know, some of our wayshowers and wise ones that have passed on. I like to highlight those shows. Anyway, I wanted to say that music that started the show this morning, that is one of my favorites. That is by Zingaya. That is a artist out of Nevada, Las Vegas, to be specific, and that cut is called Nomad's Land. And, you know, whenever I hear it, it makes me think of sitting on the back of a camel, you know, with that loping across the desert. I don't know why. I don't know if it's a past life thing, but that just, you know, enters my mind's eye whenever I hear that music. And I did actually have occasion to ride on the back of a camel once when my husband and I were in Petra on a Middle Eastern trip visiting sacred sites. It's quite an experience to ride on the back of a camel. Anyway, I digress. I did want to say, if you missed last week's show, I apologize for the show actually not airing, and it will air later on in the fall. My husband and I were actually in the emergency room all that night and into the following morning, and from a cat bite. So I have to tell you, be warned about cat bites. I've had cats all my life. I've been bitten by cats, scratched by cats, and didn't think much about it. You know, we had an unfortunate incident with one of our babies, and my husband got bit, and his hand started to swell up, and it got pretty dicey there. I mean, they were talking surgery, hospitalization, you know, warning us that if we didn't pay attention, he could lose his hand. So anyway, they told me, and I'm just passing along to you because I wouldn't want you to go through what we went through last week. If you get bitten by a cat, you should go to an urgent care and have them prescribe antibiotics and get a tetanus shot as a preventative so the infection doesn't start, because they say especially a bite on the hands are very susceptible and hard to cure. So anyway, just passing that along. So long story short, I was just wasted after being in the hospital all that night and into the next day. And so we had to reschedule the show, but we will. So if you were looking forward to that show and were disappointed, I really do apologize, but it was something that could not be avoided. I was just not coherent after all of that. So the show will happen in the fall. I think we've rescheduled it for November, which was my next available opening, because this weekly show does book up very quickly. So anyway, I just wanted to say, if you're new to the show, I'm Karen Tate, and my guests and I discuss sex, power, gender, religion, politics, magic, with a broad spectrum of visionaries, forward thinkers, women and men. And I think often it's from a right brain point of view, a divine feminine point of view. Some might not even realize that their ideas and values fit comfortably under the goddess umbrella, but they do. And some call these ideas and values the feminine consciousness, or a shift away from mainstream thinking, traditional thinking, patriarchal domination, because you know what? We can't keep doing the same things and expect anything different, and we do have to manifest a much-needed normal. And today I am so happy to, you know, have a very interesting topic for you. It's called Power, Energy in You, and my guest is Janice Bloom. She is an author, student of spiritual well-being, an advocate for positive social change. Janice has spent her adult life as a seeker, and I love that, you know, because these people out there who think they know everything, they make me nervous. I think it's a lot smarter to realize we don't know anything much, and there's so much more to know. Anyway, Janice, you know, her journey has led her through many areas of inquiry, including the human potential movement, mythological studies, ancient sacred ways. And, she, you know, she's come to believe quite a lot about power and energy, which is important for us to know. We don't learn that, I don't think, most of us anyway, coming up, you know, when we're younger. And she's going to share important information with us today. And we'll talk about the magical things she's witnessed and how this all fits into her spiritual belief system. So Janice Bloom, welcome. Welcome, welcome to Voices of the Sacred Feminine.
Thank you so much, Karen. And thank you for inviting me to talk with you today. It's such an honor to speak with you.
Oh, you know what? It's my pleasure to have you, and I learn so much from people like you every week, and the show has been my guilty pleasure. And, you know, what I didn't mention, and you'll have to bring me up to date, don't you have a book that has just published or about to be published?
Well, I have a book. It's actually been on the market for a while. I guess it's kind of a sleeper, but I wrote a book about witchcraft. I started out to write a book about spirituality. I thought I could write the message that's in the Power of Now, but make it simpler to understand, but I found out that I couldn't. I worked with a writer's group on that for a few years, and then it kind of evolved into, well, I'll write the spiritual path that I know the best, and I taught witchcraft live in we called it a witch's cottage in the woods, and it was we also called it a witch's college. So we had I was part of a coven in Santa Cruz called Greenheart Grove, and we studied the old ways, we studied the goddess ways together, and our relationship with the goddess evolved together over time. It was really a beautiful experience. So I thought, well, I'm struggling with this, I'll write about that. And I thought, I'll write a simple Wicca 101. And if that makes you giggle, it should, because it was that phrase was made up as a joke. And if you go to a lot of covens now and want to study, you will start with what they call Wicca 101, and people don't tend to laugh about it, but they can, because it was invented as you know, kind of a little inside joke. And I taught for years and years and years, but I found I was incapable of writing a simple book, so it's quite a compendium. It's the book I would have wanted when I started, with a lot of appendices and so forth. So
okay.
That's my spiritual
okay.
background, and I have moved on from there, but no matter where else I go, I will always, at my heart and at my core, be a witch in service to the goddess in her many guises, including our planet, our home, our Mother Earth.
Absolutely.
So that's my
and
book.
I know
Witchcraft, Power, and Transformation.
And I imagine you can find it on Amazon or order it in
Amazon,
all the usual
yeah.
places.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Not
well,
all
and
the
I know
usual
you're
places, but it's on Amazon.
Okay, all right. And I know you're on a quest to liberate humanity from toxic guilt, shame, and blame. That's something we definitely share in common, because I think that's like a plague on the planet. And you've sort of married your alternative spirituality with just a sort of a normal mainstream life. You worked for Cabrillo College in counseling for a long time as well. So, you had a kind of a real well-rounded experience out there in the world dealing with people.
Yes, that's very important to me because, I mean, anyone can be spiritual if you go to a monastery or an ashram, and that's what some people need to do on their journey. It's time for that. But for me, for this lifetime, I felt like I really want to be involved in the world, in life, with real people, because we're all on this journey together. And it feels like the change that humanity is going through together, it feels like we're breaking down the walls between us. We're all just, a phrase comes to me from the fire sign theater. I'm from that generation, you know, from the original hippie generation, although that's a long story. I wasn't a hippie back then, but I am now. But they had an album called We're All Bozos on This Bus. And that's what I feel like. We're all just bozos on this bus. Like there was a pop song with a lyric like that in it too. We're just, what if God's just one of us? Is somebody on a bus trying to make his way home? You know, that's how I feel about life. It's just, we're here. It's such a mystery. And we're struggling to do the best we can. So I just want to know.
Yeah.
I want to get my hands on all the tools for doing the best I can with real life, like everybody else. And I want to share about that.
Well, and Janice, you know, I have since I came off a hiatus and I've been back, I feel like there's probably a lot of new listeners out there. And, you know, I think witch, the W word, can be so loaded, and it comes with so much negative baggage. You know, patriarchy has made people so afraid of so many things. For someone who maybe has only heard the patriarchal, demonization, how would you define, being a witch and working in a coven?
Sure. This seems to be a linguistic thing that we have to deal with every generation. And people have really worked hard to reclaim the word witch. It seems like every time we do it, the other side keeps building up. And I think that's probably because it's definitely part of the ethos of witchcraft, is that we accept the light and the dark. So the first definition I learned of the word, well, first of all, I use the word witch in the neo-pagan context, which means referring back to the old ways of doing things before Europe, and particularly the British Isles, but a lot of my tradition comes from Southern Europe, from Italy too. Before Europe became Christian, the way people did things, the whole the Druidic thing in the British Isles, the Strega energy in Italy, it was a nature-based spiritual practice, very akin to shamanism, kind of, I see it as a layer kind of between shamanism and, like the more temple religions that grew up later. It's like a village kind of spirituality and medicine and just emotional and spiritual support for the people is how I see the old witches. But we accept the dark and the light, and there's no question that there may have been, as there are today, people who misuse those powers. Part of the ethos of neo-paganism is personal spiritual sovereignty and non-judgment. And if that's where somebody is on their path and that's what they choose to do, then, that's their choice and they take the blowback for it. So it is a
And there's a lot of people who do bad things from the pulpit, too. So,
For
somebody, was based on the agricultural cycle too. It was very much being close to the land, animal husbandry and farming and herbalism and stuff like that as well.
herbalism, the use of stones and plants, and the Aristotelian elements of earth, air, fire, water, and spirit, and all of that. And the system still works today if you tune into it and use it and know what it does and work with it appropriately. And, you know, of course, there's television magic, there's movie magic, and that's real magic is nothing like that. It can be very, very subtle. And then sometimes it can manifest in just astounding ways. But it's definitely a real force that I work with every day of my life. My worldview has definitely shifted from one of material worldview. Like when I look around me, I don't see static things. I see the result of atoms and molecules in motion forming in this way at this time right now, and it's all changing and it's all moving all the time.
Okay, and so I suspect that our topic today, power, energy, and you, you know, that sort of runs parallel to this, you know, what you've been describing.
Absolutely, because that's what there is to tap into. If we think about, you know, what scientists are telling us now today about what's happening on a subatomic level, what I just said about everything being in motion all the time is scientifically accurate. And looking at the world that way as energy, not as stuff, then you're part of it. Your energy is part of all the energy that's flowing through. It's constantly, it's like being in a stream or, you know, being in a creek where the water is always flowing by and you're maybe walking downstream with it. That's what life is like for me. And my consciousness is focused on tuning into harmonizing with that. And when I feel disharmony in me, then what there is for me to do is to look and see where that comes from and accept how I'm feeling, what's happening with me, what's flowing through me at the moment, at the same time keeping my attention on where I'm going. And it makes life a whole different game.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you're reminding me, and this may be a little different, but I can't help it that this comes to mind, and I wonder if you've ever heard this. You know, me being associated with Isis and, you know, having worked with her for so long, her, Bast, mm-hmm. and Hathor, those three Egyptian goddesses worked mm-hmm. with the Sistrum. And Herodotus said when Isis shook the Sistrum, she kept the energies of the universe flowing. And I look at that on Ooh. So many layers, you know. I look at mm-hmm. it as, okay, well, she was, we think of her goddess as the creatrix of the world. So, of course, mm-hmm. you know, she would be responsible for the energies of the universe. But also this idea that the energies have to be flowing so that life doesn't become stagnant. You know, on so many different
right.
levels. And I feel like you're sort of talking about that because, you know, when we stop growing, stop seeking, stop learning, I think our life becomes stagnant and we get stuck in these little boxes of maybe hate
yes.
and, you know, misinformation and fear. You know, rather than, I don't know, going out into life as if it's an adventure rather than something to, you know, to be afraid of every day.
Yes. Well, what you're describing about like being boxed in and so forth is pretty much our default setting, like how our parents thought and acted and behaved and like the generational inheritance that we have in terms of, you know, human behavior. And I find for me it takes discipline to retrain my mind, to use my mind in a different way and to not get stuck and to constantly keep myself flexible. And what that has to do with is like when my stories come up, it starts with self-judgment. Anytime I notice something going through my head that's a self-judgment, I cancel it out. I either think cancel, which is a word that some people have a negative relationship with now, but I'm reclaiming it because it's a very powerful practice. It's one of the things that really started turning my life around was to every time I have a negative thought about myself to say, you know, no brain, we don't do that anymore. And it starts there. And then just constantly pulling yourself into consciousness of the present moment as much as you possibly can, you know, when you find yourself labeling something or get the, been there, done that feeling, to you have the mental discipline to get beyond that and to be in the present, in the moment, right now, as it's unfolding. And it makes like a whole, an experience of satisfaction, of clarity, of accomplishment.
I'm wondering too, Janice, you know, you're talking about the, you know, energy and it's all around us and it's everything. Do you also have a sense of when we become tuned into that, we have a better understanding of how we're all connected and we're really not separate?
Oh, no question. No question at all, Karen. That is so true for me. And that's one of the things that's important, is because we're taught to think of ourselves as individual and to take care of ourselves, but not taking care of ourselves like in a win-win situation, like we have a world where you take exquisite care of yourself and everybody else takes exquisite care of themselves, and then we all pitch in and do our best to support each other. We're taught to think of ourselves as separate, individual, and take care of number one first. And there's a truth to that. You know, what I find interesting is that so much we're like, is this true or is it not true? We have such a dualistic worldview. There's so much that's like, well, it's got this good part and then it's got this sharp backside. And that's one of the most important things that I learned, is that you can't, like, I want this in my life, but I don't want that, because there's a good side and an unhappy side to just about everything, and which sides those are depend on the individual. And we can't like put everything in a category of I want this in my life and I don't want that in my life, because there's just too much good and too much bad in so many different things, and even things that are opposed to each other, that some of my choices in life I can't justify logically. I just know they work for me.
Right. Well, and speaking of that, I mean, obviously from everything you've said, you know, you believe magic is a real force that people can use. Can you describe some magical things that you've witnessed?
I certainly can't. There's one thing I'd like to address in your speaking, and this is not a criticism at all, because I'm unusual in my use of language, and that's part of the craft. Is that words are power. Words are part of the energy too. Our words and our thoughts are just as much of a part of our reality as any material object. And in fact, in our personal reality, our words and our thoughts are much more important than the material objects around us. So what I want to say, and it goes back to this not getting stuck in your mind thing, is that I don't believe in believing, is a way to say it, is that I resist belief systems. I'm more interested in being in the moment, in the present, as how it is. And it may or may not fit with my belief systems. You know what I'm saying? And I have them. Every human being does. That's the way our brains are designed. And magic is very real for me. But I don't believe in magic. I don't believe in God. I don't believe in goddess. But I have real experiences of all of those things. So now, would you like to hear the story of the most astounding magical experience I ever had?
Yeah, absolutely. And then maybe will it sort of inform what you just said, too? Because what you just said is really interesting as well.
Yeah, I'm happy to go back over that and talk about any part of it you want.
Sure. Yeah, well, go ahead.
I'll tell you the story. So my son, who is now 33, was about 2.5 or 3 years old. We lived in Malibu Lake, which is a part of Southern California. It has a little man-made lake and a pretty area to walk in. And I had a jogging stroller because it's kind of hilly and there are no sidewalks or anything out there. And so, you know, to enable to take walks with my kid. So we went down to Malibu Lake and parked the stroller. There's a little dock there and a lot of ducks. And so we took bread and we were feeding the ducks. And, I'm sorry, my phone. Can you hear my phone ringing on your podcast?
No, I don't.
My apologies.
No, I don't.
Okay, I'm glad you didn't hear it. So anyway, okay, so we're there. We're feeding the ducks. There's a swing set there. So we left the stroller on the dock, and we went over to play on the swings. And I'm pushing Robin on the swings, and I look up, and I notice that the stroller is rolling. It's one of those expensive, like, they were $250 back in the day, you know, those jogging strollers when they first came out. And it's rolling toward the water. And I'm like 20 feet away from it or more, or 100 feet maybe. And I look at it, and it's like this expensive stroller is about to go in the lake, and there's nothing I can do. So I point my finger, and I yell, "Stop!" And it did at that moment. I have one witness, but I have no means of contacting her. There was another mother there playing with her kid. She looked at me, she goes, "How did you do that?" And I said, "I wish I knew." And this was before I studied any witchcraft, but it was when I had first begun to investigate the goddess and begin to look for any neo-pagans I could find and connect with that whole thing that was happening. And so that was like a signal to get my attention or something. But I yelled, "Stop," and the stroller stopped.
Well, I think you said something in the beginning that's really important. And, you know, I wish someone had said it to me, 35 years ago when I first began to learn about all of this, is magic is subtle. You know, it's very subtle, and it takes forms that, we often just miss altogether because we're used to seeing how Hollywood portrays magic to keep us interested in the TV shows or the movies, you know. And and I think that's really important to know that sometimes these things are very subtle. You know, sometimes it can be serendipity. Yes. Sometimes, I mean, I had a woman tell me that she was driving down the highway and her engine light was on, and she knew she was losing oil and her engine could have frozen up. And she just kept doing these mantras, you know, to Isis, just to kind of keep it going till she could get home. And she made it. And it really, you know, her mechanic said, you know, she just sort of defied expectation, you know. And I don't know if I'm telling the story right, but the point is, I think a key, and you can tell me if I'm, you know, you have another theory, but I think these things work when we have a lot of emotion invested in it. I don't think we can do magic successfully and have something happen if we just kind of, oh, well, you know, it's when we really need or want something. It's got to be a high emotion kind of a thing, I think, for the magic to kick in. Do you agree?
Absolutely. And here's the tricky part of that is that our minds are often at war within ourselves. I had a spiritual teacher once who was giving a class on manifestation. And he used this example. He described a cartoon where two guys are trying to move a piano, and it's like three frames of guys like sweating and straining to push the piano through this door. And on the last frame, one of the guys says, "Man, we're never going to get this piano out of here." And the other guy goes, "Out? I thought we were trying to get it in." So this is what happens sometimes. We have to raise our emotions about what we want in order to manifest what we want. But a lot of times when we do that, we raise the opposition, unconscious opposition that we don't know about. So the work of that magic is sometimes to reveal that opposition.
Yeah.
So if we're at war with ourselves, then we can't open ourselves to what's actually going to happen that's for our best interest. So we interpret it as not for our best interest, so it feeds the side of us that keeps things from manifesting. One way to work around that is with sigil magic. Do you use sigils, Karen?
I don't do sigils, but I have a friend who does and has had really good, good results from it.
Yeah, a lot of times what you can do is just put all that emotion in the sigil. And then I have one of my magical teachers said, once you've done a spell, you do your work, and then you forget about it. And just
let it go.
It's like planting a seed. You don't dig it up. You let it do what it's going to do. And so at any moment, being in acceptance and at peace with the way things are, even if you don't like them, even if you don't like the circumstances, to be at peace with the circumstances and not get into a silent conversation in your head about how horrible life is and how you're always mistreated, that's the mental discipline involved in creating a magical life that's satisfying and fulfilling. And stuff can happen that you don't like. That's the human journey.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when I've come to think that we humans, it would be wonderful if we learned and evolved and grew through happy, joyful things. I don't think we do quite as readily as from, say, pain or loss or grief. I think it's the hard stuff that really teaches us. And if we don't endure some of these challenges in life, I wonder if we're experiencing the opportunity for growth, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense to me. In fact, I pretty much have a worldview that's kind of what this whole game is about. We are divine energy taking on physical form, and it's like a game of hide and seek. Can we find ourselves again? We feel that divine spark inside, whatever we call it. I mean, I don't think you have to necessarily believe in God. Most of my kids are either atheists or agnostics, but they have these values. They have the same, to me, they're on the same spiritual journey I am, is they're living their highest and best values. They're kind human beings. They see their connection to others, and I don't think they need to believe in anything to fulfill themselves and come back to their divine potential. They don't have to call it the same thing I call it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, it goes back to the thing where, you know, you can be an agnostic or an atheist and still be a good person. You know, religion or spirituality isn't really necessary. It's really, you know, about your personal morality. And really, it's almost as if, I'm surprised I'm kind of going there, but you're churning up the brain cells here. You know, it's something we said earlier that we're all energy, right? And, you know, and the earth is all energy. Everything we know that exists is all energy, even the rock that, you know, seems to have no energy, right? And so in a sense, I think if there was I'm going to use this word very loosely, if there were a religion, I think it you'd almost have to say science is the religion, because I'm saying that from the perspective of maybe science studies energy, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't have to have a deity attached, doesn't have to have a spiritual ideology attached. We're just we're observing things, and we're learning from observation and trial and error, you know, experiments, if you will, you know, which happen to be our life experiences or the experiments. I don't know. I think something you said before, it's really all about the energy. And when we think about our thoughts, are also things and energy. That plays into this too. And I've thought for a while now that if all of us, I'm in my 60s now, but if people of my generation had grown up knowing thoughts or things and knowing about energy and how we manifest our life, potentially through our thoughts. I don't know. I think that would make us much more powerful human beings for good and to make our lives a better quality of life if we knew we had that power.
Absolutely. Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that the general consensus is pretty much heading in that direction. I mean, I can have conversations with my family members who are not into the same spiritual trip that I am. I can talk about all of these things and really be in communion with them about it. And I think that younger generations are going to look at things differently. At least it seems like it's going that way. If we can sustain the planet long enough for them to do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I unfortunately, I have to take a break. But when we come back,
okay.
I want to talk a little bit more about the energy we put into our lives, the energy we're putting into the world, your thoughts on all of that. But first,
sure.
We have a word here from Joe Carson.
Hello. Let me say a few things about Joe Carson's film, Dancing with Gaia, an exploration of Earth-based spirituality shot at sacred sites around the world. Here is Drusilla Pettibone on DearMist.com. I was truly touched and even awed by the film. I really appreciate that there is so much substantive information to digest. For example, the info about hinges and tracing the horizon line is all new to me and totally fascinating. The film was very beautiful, and I was amazed how it was able to capture so many of the descriptions visually and seamlessly connect vintage footage with modern. I especially loved when images were dynamically superimposed on each other, like the lace with the water and the dancing in the flowering meadow. A visual feast and with so many layers. I am also pleased to have been introduced to Monica Shu and her work. It's so important for pagans to become aware of our heritage. It seems easily lost among so many new books, and the film really brought me home in a new way. Dancing with Gaia is available at dancingwithgaia.com.
I also want to make sure I remind you about the Divine Feminine app. The Divine Feminine app is free, and it's a great resource that's been around for a number of years. And it helps you learn about events that are in your area, and it also helps you learn about events happening around the world or virtually that you can even take part in. So I would recommend highly you go to the Divine Feminine app. I was amazed at how widespread goddess events have actually spread in the last few years. I was really gobsmacked, I have to tell you. And you'll get a sense of that if you go to the Divine Feminine app and just look around. I mean, they have everything there from conferences to sacred tours to podcasts like mine. You know, and like I said, events that are happening locally. You put in your zip code or your city and things that are happening just pop up. It's free if all you do is look, is my understanding. And if you want to post your own events, I think it's a small monthly fee to get your event listed there. So take a look at that. And while I have your attention and I'm talking about things I'd like you to you know, consider, I want to remind you about my new book that came out in January, Normalizing Abuse. Because you know what? We are normalizing abuse, and whether we want to look at it or not, I feel like it's important that we do. Sometimes it's a difficult subject, but if we want to have a better quality of life, we really do have to take a look at the many different facets of our life, whether it be our personal relationships, our workplace, our communities, our religion, academia, the media, so many different areas where we have just sort of been part of this manufactured consent, and we just go along with it, saying that, well, this is just the way it is. Well, we have to start naming that dis-ease as abuse and exploitation or harm and misuse, because until we do, I don't think we have much of a chance of changing things for the better. We have to call it what it is. We have to recognize it. And I hope normalizing abuse helps readers look at so many things they might not have been considering abuse, and it really is. For instance, I was just learning about this, they call it blanket training, that they do in some of these fundamentalist religions to break the will of children, and they'll put a six-month-old baby on a blanket and tease it to reach for a toy that it likes, and they'll just keep hitting the baby's arm until, they stop reaching for it. And it's the beginning of breaking that child's will. Or maybe it's an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement. We used to think those were pretty harmless. Well, now evil people use those to hide the bad things that they do. Or maybe it's abuse in the workplace. You know, your employer is not providing a safe environment, doesn't want you to hire people that are of a certain age or disability, and that's breaking the law. There's so many things that happen in our everyday life that's actually abuse and exploitation that I think we really have to take a moment and stop and look at it, because until we do, we don't plan our escape hatch, our escape strategy. Anyway, normalizing abuse, learn more about it at my website, KarenTate.net, or go check it out on Amazon. So today I am talking to Janice Bloom about power, energy, and you. If you missed the beginning of this interview, please go back and replay it. You will want to hear how this all started. So Janice, I guess I want to ask you about, we're talking about the energy we put out there in the world. And, I know in witchcraft they say, what you put out there comes back to you threefold. I wonder if you believe that, but I also wonder about, it's hard to ignore all the, the political dis-ease that's out there, and how afraid people are about losing democracy, and, afraid of their neighbors, all the rest. And mm-hmm. I wonder how you reconcile all of that with the topic that we're talking about today.
Well, I feel that what we are observing in the world today is an expression of that. And if you look at different spiritual traditions from around the world, they'll have different cycles that they see us go through. And almost all of them agree that the time we're living through right now is a time of great change, a time of shifting of values, of moving into a new paradigm. And we can really see this happening all around us. If you want to make an omelet, you got to break some eggs. We have to move out of the paradigm that we're living in, which is definitely a dominator paradigm. It doesn't take much. Once you've got that language, all you have to do is start looking around, and you just see examples everywhere you look. It's in our families. It's in our businesses. It's in employment relationships. It feeds into this abuse that you've written about in your book. It's how that abuse expresses itself, because we think we have to dominate everyone around us and be the king of the hill in order to succeed in life. And that's so backwards, and it leads to such an unfulfilling life. And then people So there's two sides of this. Either you're the exploited and you're frustrated and you're angry at your who you see as your oppressors, or you're maybe you own a business and then you are trying to make as much profit as you can and pay as little in wages as you possibly can, and that's the business model we work under. That's what you do when you have a business. So people are frustrated with trying to exploit each other. It's just not a happy, healthy society. So, you know,
yeah.
I'm just, the personal is political. I look for evidence of that in my life, and I do the best just to have inclusion and love and compassion and just openness in my life, and it's so, so rewarding. And whenever I get down, whenever my old stuff comes up and my life is hard, I have so many friends I can turn to lift me up, and life just gets better and better for me.
Well, that's, you know, that's kind of a good example, you know, to set for others that in spite of all the turmoil, you can sort of create your own bubble and not be so adversely affected, I think is what I'm hearing you say.
Well, that's part of it. And I'm more of us who are creating these bubbles, and then they start to overlap, and then the people who are not in the bubble can still feel the, you know, feel the waves from it, feel the ripples from it. And little by little things start to change, but it can't be so much little by little anymore. And I see it changing very rapidly, and I'm feeding that change. And I'm not afraid to speak up. I'm not afraid to counter oppression or bigotry or institutional racism, or have conversations about any of it. None of that scares me. I'm willing to take it on head on and just speak to what we're experiencing as a culture, what individuals are experiencing in our culture, what shows up as oppression, what shows up as opportunity, what kinds of values do we share at our core that make us human, and how can we build a culture on that and meet each other's needs? And I think we're heading in that direction, and you know, we've either got to get there or we're going to lose the whole thing is what it looks like to me.
Yeah, it really does feel like all or nothing, and you know, it feels like the other side is not even trying to put on you know, there's not even a facade anymore. It's just it's just such open domination, and
well,
you know, win at any cost.
I think I've heard polls reported that say what the constituents on that side want is to own the other side. So that's clearly just expressing we just want to dominate. Right.
Yeah. And you know, God, I know this is going to sound judgmental, but I don't mean it in a judgmental way. I mean it as an observation. You know, where I think the news media fails is, you know, the religion is so much a part of this. You know, whether we're talking about patriarchal religion is hand in glove with capitalism. Also, you know, the idea that, I mean, so many of these fundamentalist groups are about male domination. You know,
yes.
The will of anybody else doesn't matter. You know, their needs, their desires, you know, they're just supposed to be subservient to, you know, to men. And, you know, it's about, you know, racism, white supremacy, again, power over as opposed to harmony and creating win-win situations. And it's I feel like if the news media talked a little bit more about how religion plays into this, I don't know, because it feels like, you know, if you look at some of these documentaries and you see how these communities are being groomed and you see how women are brought up to just endure or accept anything.
Starting with blanket training at 6 months old, right?
Exactly, exactly. I think it's important for the public to know it, and that these groups have as their mission to actually take over the country, take over the world. I mean, look,
oh,
Mike Pence was one of them. You know, Mike Pence is a Dominionist, and he was the vice president.
Yes.
And I don't think the average person knows that these people are, I guess I want to say, hiding in plain sight and what their agenda is. And I think the media does a disservice by, you know, they'll say, oh, it's conservative or it's right wing. But it's, you
right.
know, it's fundamentalism, it's evangelicals, it's religion
yes.
that's driving this. and it just feels to me that isn't talked about enough.
Well, I agree with you. I don't think it's as well known as it needs to be. It's a social movement that's affecting people's lives, and they don't know what it is, so they can't address it. And I agree with you. I left evangelical Christianity. That was my spiritual home of origin, and I did have a relationship with Jesus. I was saved. That was very real for me. But there came a point, my deconstruction happened before deconstruction was a thing. We didn't deconstruct back in the day. I left in 1971, and back then we didn't deconstruct, we backslid. So I backslid. But the way it happened was I had a baby, and we hadn't been going to church very regularly, and some people came to visit at our home. And I was having a conversation with them, and I said, well, you know, I want a fellowship with you. I still have a relationship with Jesus. I still feel the whole thing. I'm just overwhelmed with the baby. And, you know, my thinking has begun to change a little bit. I'm, like, really wondering if the story in Genesis is simply a Hebrew version of a creation myth. And there was silence. You could have heard a pin drop. And the man said to me, oh, Janice, that's so sad to me that a sweet person like yourself is no longer walking with the Lord. I didn't choose to no longer walk with the Lord. I just had reached that point in my development where I started wondering that and to realize that the religion of my youth was such a thought prison. I couldn't even question whether Genesis was a creation myth. I'm like, I'm done. It was almost that surgical. It was almost that painless. I just knew that my thinking had evolved beyond that, and I could no longer be imprisoned that way.
Well, and
so
when
I
we
understand,
see the,
and they want to take over the world. Go ahead, Karen.
Yeah, and when we see the book banning and we see changing curriculums in school, this should be real big red flags because it's about knowledge is power, and it's about keeping knowledge away from people so that they can be manipulated.
Ooh. You're getting me all revved up now. You know, my biggest one is the whole thing they're doing to the trans community. It breaks
I
almost swore. It breaks my heart. I have a trans child, and it has been the biggest learning experience of my life. And there are people who are born trans. It's a real thing. No psychologist is sitting in. There's this movie, the Epic Times, whatever industry that is. I mean, they put out such propaganda. And they have a movie out about, and there's a clip on YouTube right now. There's an ad. There's a psychologist talking to a child and going, well, don't you think you'd be happier if you were a boy? I mean, they're presenting this whole false scenario that the medical community is talking our kids into this and that it's not a real thing. And that is such baloney. And it's attacking the most vulnerable and the most powerless population in our society. I'll bet if you looked at the numbers and the suicides and the level of employment and income and all measures that you would use, you'd find that the trans community is one of the most oppressed communities, one of the weakest communities in our culture. And they're gentle, compassionate, caring people who have this whole experience of this you know, transformation is a process of breaking yourself up and reforming yourself. It's like being transgender is an experience that forces you through transformation, right? They're very conscious people. You have to be to live through being trans. And yet they are under attack like nobody else in our country. It just makes me so angry. Thank you for the opportunity to say this.
Well, look, I'm with you there, and I will take it a step further and say, I don't know that I've said this publicly before, but I'm really disturbed by women in the goddess community who are on this bandwagon of erasure of women. I wonder if they know that they are, you know, that they are spouting Federalist Society right-wing propaganda. And and I know some of them say that, well, the left doesn't give them a platform, so they've even gone on shows like Tucker Carlson. You know, I mean, the right would burn them at the stake, you know, but yet they're aligning with them to promote this agenda, and I feel like there isn't an erasure of women. That is like the war on Christmas. It's, you know, it's an idea that's, I think, been manufactured. I mean, we didn't get up in arms when suddenly, you know, postmen were called postal workers. You know, we didn't get up in arms when the military changed all of their documents and their manuals to have a how would you say it, you know, from the language from a male perspective to a genderless perspective. Gender-neutral, thank you. I mean, we weren't saying, we weren't worried about the erasure of men. I don't know. And that also calls into play in ignoring the precedent for, you know, goddess worshippers in India or Kabbali worshippers, you know, castrated males and things like that. I think it's really sad. And I don't know. To me, it's almost an embarrassment to have this erasure of woman thing where, you know, women in the goddess community are coming out against trans people. That's not the goddess way. I mean, goddess loves all her children, and I'm sure some things maybe have to be tweaked so that, you know, people who were men are not competing against women in sports. You know, that makes sense to me. You know, although I think their bodies do change hormonally. Yeah, it's a small percentage. It's a minute number of people, but yet they're blowing it up out of proportion like it's happening, you know, 10 times a day in every school in every neighborhood, you know.
Yes, so. And like it's something being pushed on kids by adults, and it's absolutely not.
No,
in fact,
but,
the kids are
but I will say But you know, they talk, well, everything is projection, right, from the other side.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're saying that, you know, the left is grooming kids to be trans while they are grooming kids to not be their authentic selves, like pray away the gay.
Exactly.
You know, or, you know, gays are an abomination. You know, they're, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole nother show, I guess, Janice.
Well, we've run so much.
And we've kind of, you know, hit the end of our time. I want to give you an opportunity. I know, doesn't it? I want to give you an opportunity for kind of a you know, closing thought or comment. Is there anything that I haven't thought to ask you that you wanted to make a point about our show topic, Power, Energy, and You?
Well, yes, I'd like to talk about my next impulse, like where I'm going now. And I have felt a calling to be of service, to be in a ministry to spiritual families, spiritual parents with young children, because just like we were talking about, so much that's out there on the market is biblical-based. It's like a blanket training, you know, like corporal punishment-based. I have a whole other approach to child raising. It doesn't even involve punishment or this you're good or you're bad thing at all. I raised my kids without calling them good or bad or teaching them those concepts. I just taught them to find their inner strength and live according to their own values and have integrity. And there's a different way to raise children without always making them bad, you know. So that's what I'm working on now. I'm going to be announcing a workshop. I'm going to have a free online workshop, and then I'm going to be putting together some kind of a paid event. I don't know exactly how that's going to shake out right now, but that's what I'm working on now.
Well, that sounds like a real commendable thing to be doing, you know, and let me know about it, and we'll make some announcements from the show here for you, okay?
Thank you. Yeah, my challenge is, here's what my challenge is, and I would appreciate any feedback if anybody out there is, you know, has expertise in early childhood education or anything like that. The parents are so in the thick of just life and daily demands of needing to feed the kids and put them to bed and go to work and earn the food and shop for the food. And everything you have to do to be a parent is so demanding and so overwhelming. They need really concrete stuff. If I come in with some spiritual overarching thing, it may be wonderful, it may be true, and it may be helpful, but they're not going to have the listening for it unless it's coupled with really practical, down-to-earth stuff that's going to help on a day-to-day basis. So I can do the esoteric part. It's the other stuff I'm looking for input with. So if anybody out there has anything, if there's a way, you know, you can should I give my website? I can give my website address. Is
absolutely,
this my name?
Yeah,
www.janicebloomy, I say my name Bloomy, .com. So just
Janice is not spelled the traditional way, too. You want to spell it, Janice.
That's right. JanusBlume. Thank you, Karen. Yeah. So if anybody has any input for me about that, I would really appreciate it because I want to give these parents something of value. They deserve it. And, you know, we were talking about creating those bubbles. That's what these people are looking to do in their families, create this bubble of the values that we've been discussing today. And I want to support that process for the kids that are just getting here now.
Yeah, I think that's a real valuable tool. And I think we also have to try to create circles of support, whether we're parents or whether we're, just individuals. Because sometimes it feels like we're so alone out there. And, patriarchy is the strategy of dividing us. You know, it used to be we had tribes that we could depend on, but patriarchy divides us. And that makes us vulnerable. And we really have to get more into the idea of, creating circles of support. It doesn't mean you have to agree with everything everybody in the circle believes, you know, but, just kind of have a general consensus that we need each other, you know. We need each other, and life is too hard to try to be this, this individual pulling himself up from the bootstraps, you know, like Protestantism tells us. I think that stands in the way of us having a stronger social safety net as well. So many different topics. But we definitely need support for parents, for us as individuals, we need stronger communities because I think as people are leaving churches because they're so tired of the hypocrisy, that leaves a big gap in their life. And I think it's smart to probably leave a church or a community that's full of isms, you know, homophobia and all of that. But I think you do have to replace it with something that's not QAnon, you know, or not some crazy stuff. We have to figure out a way to have stronger communities, and I think. The Pew Institute says people are leaving churches in droves, and there's probably reason for that. But we have to replace, that missing link. So something that's been niggling in the back of my brain. So, Janice, thank you so much.
Perfect.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Karen.
Well, thank you for being on the show, Janice, and keep in touch. And when you have this program together, let me know, and we'll definitely either have you back on to talk about it or we'll do some commercials for you or something like that.
Oh, beautiful. I'm so grateful. I appreciate that so much. Thank you for letting me say my piece today. I've got a lot to say, and I'm looking for opportunities to say it.
I hear you. I definitely know what you mean. Well, thank you so much. You know, wish you well with what you're doing in the world. Hope maybe the show gives your book a little bit of a boost and you sell some copies.
Thank you.
And it was really nice talking to you today. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Karen. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, that about does it for me for today. Let me see if I can quickly put my hands on what next week's show is going to be, and I think I can. Laura Lee is going to be with me. She is from the Cuyamunga Institute. We're going to be talking about using ancient ritual body postures for spirit journeying, you know, for shamanic use. And then the following week, Beth Bartlett is with me. She's a women's studies person, and we're going to be talking about how we've lost the sense of the common good. And a lot of it has to do with literally losing common ground. It's a really interesting concept there. And then the final show of the month is going to be about restoring the sacred feminine in plant medicine with Marguerite Rigoglioso. So those are the shows coming up. I hope you will subscribe to the show on Blog Talk. If you do subscribe, you will get a notice in your inbox once a week that tells you what the show is, and it gives you a convenient little button to click that will take you right to the show, and you can listen to it at your convenience. So I am going to close the show today with stating the four reasons Carol Chris said women need goddess. The first is to affirm and legitimize the beneficence of female power. The second, to affirm the female body and its life cycles. The third is the affirmation of woman's will. And the fourth is the affirmation of women's bonds with one another and their positive female heritage. So there's that, and that's really important because if we don't have that, it adversely affects us so many different institutions and structures within society and culture and families. All right, that does it for me for today. I will see you next Wednesday at 11 o'clock, and I'm going to close with an homage to Sekhmet, the lion-headed Egyptian goddess, because she is about strength, courage, saying no without guilt, and teaching women to have healthy boundaries. Okay, Sekhmet, take it away.